Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, and to December's Forest Ramble. I am your host, Rich Ferraro, and in today's post-World Cup podcast, we will discuss Forest players at the World Cup. We'll think about the performances and results of the Reds in the recent friendly matches. And we'll also ask Gustavo Scarpa, is he the real deal? We're going to preview the second half of the season. We'll have our regular sketch from Jeremy Davis. We'll hear a little bit from you, the fans. And we'll also have a game of Guess That Red. All in this episode of 1865, the podcast whose pipes aren't frozen anymore. Now let's say hello to today's panel. And we're going to ask them which Forest player they think has played best at the World Cup. So hello to Adam.
Hello, you're right. I think I'm glad that I got to go first in this one. Remo Freuler, I think, is the obvious answer for me.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And we'll come back to that in a bit. Welcome to the podcast. For the first time in real life, Callum Castell.
Hi, how you doing? thank you for having me. I'm going to have to agree with that as well. I think by some fine margin, it was Freuler as well. We went furthest and scored a winning goal to get him to the next stage of the knockouts. And the Welsh boys weren't great and Coyote got injured. So it's Freuler for me.
Okay. And with a bit of a bum steer on this one. Hello, Stephen Topless.
Hello. Yeah, hard to argue with Remo Freuler having the most impact. But if you want to talk in terms of the player who had the most impact with an opposition player, that would be Wayne Hennessy, who nearly took off the head of an Iranian forward in Wales' defeat in their second group game and was promptly sent off.
It was Schumacher-esque, wasn't it, Stephen?
Well, I mean, that's one way to leave your mark on the World Cup, isn't it? So that's Wayne just leaving a bit of something there for us all to remember.
And bearing in mind that his next contribution in a professional football environment will be to play at Old Trafford in about a week's time. So let's see how that goes. So we'll return to that topic of Forest players at the World Cup a little bit later. But first, I want to turn to you, Callum. So as I said, you've been providing news roundups for us throughout the season, but you're making your proper debut on the pod. And I asked you to give us a little summary of how Forest have done, the remaining players have done in the friendlies while the World Cup's been going on. So over to you.
Yeah, so it's been about minutes in the legs mainly, but The first few games were all losses by a one-goal margin, but started off with a 2-1 loss to Stoke in Loughborough, with Gibbs-White giving Forest the lead with a good goal before half-time. But then Steve Cooper changed the whole starting 11 at half-time, and Forest went on to lose 2-1. Atromitos was a game that I don't think anyone was able to watch, but we were given a pretty much down low from the club. Was a 3-2 loss, went into half-time with the lead again. I think Scarpa put his kind of name and his stamp on that game. I think it was a corner that was headed in by an Atromitos player, and then a Scarpa cross that was headed in by Yatesy. But again, 9 changes at half-time, so it was all about minutes in the legs. Olympiacos, 1-0 loss. Kasimi scored for Olympiacos in the first half. 19 players appeared for Forest on the day. So again, all about minutes in the legs. And then Valencia, we finally won 2-1. So it wasn't about minutes in the legs. It was about Aouni getting on the score sheet, Dennis getting on the score sheet, Scarpa with his left foot and his assist. And it was a much nicer way to kind of end the friendlies that it was all about minutes in the legs, and then ended up just ultimately making us feel like we could win the league again. So it was all in all, it was a couple of losses, but very important to get those minutes in.
Thank you, Callum. And as you said, I mean, the main thing is just so that the players can do something which is more than just kind of training ground runs and exercises. It's trying to put a little bit of kind of real world experience in there. And also, I think working on the togetherness of the players. One of the things that we've talked about before is, of course, that really a lot of Forest players didn't get a pre-season with the club. So this is a chance for some of those. And I guess we're thinking about the likes of Lingard and Renan Lodi and so on, for example, who you can see that they've got they've only really got into gear right towards before the World Cup break actually took place. So it shows that actually having a pre-season can be really important. And Stephen, just on that topic of getting that pre-season type vibe going, the thing with playing pre-season matches is also that sometimes, you do get little odd things happening. And I never thought I'd see the name Pajtim Kasami again, did you?
No, that was a surprise and a half, wasn't it? Almost half expected Bukalakis to then follow up with a goal himself after Kasami scored that header. It was a nice header, to be fair. I don't think he ever looked like doing anything of that note in a Forest shirt. But another example of a player who came through the club and then ended up at Olympiacos and seems to have done all right for himself there, actually. So, yeah, that was a blast from the past and a bit of a reminder of where we've come from over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's, I've actually been asked to write a piece for The Observer. It's going to come out at New Year's, which is a kind of a half-time report, I suppose, for Premier League clubs. And one of the things that they asked was, who's been the worst signings? Now, I'm not going to give away who I've chosen as my worst Forest signings, but one of the points I did make was that really, it's not always the player's fault, is it? Sometimes Forest have just kind of signed a player, just assuming that you sign a player and then that's it. But I think Kasami's a good example of that. They signed him on this loan without any kind of real rhyme or reason, and then it didn't work out. And there's only so much blame you can attach to the player in that instance. But on the topic of players, we have got a new man who Callum mentioned there, and Adam, I'm just going to come to you because I think it's fair to say that as a fan base, we've got something to be excited about with the addition of Gustavo Scarpa, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to be the person that sort of rains on everyone's parade a little bit, but I'm being very apprehensive of him. Mm-hmm. Like, look, in Brazil, he's done brilliantly well, and he's clearly got a lot of ability. I would never question that. And from the games that we've seen in the Valencia game, especially, like, he looked very good on the ball. But the Premier League is very, very different to Brazil, right? It's hard to have a real parameter for how good he's going to be in England yet. He's definitely got the right attitude. He's definitely very likable. And I think that's one thing that a lot of Forest fans have had so far, that he's incredibly likable. But I think that we have to be kind of quietly optimistic, maybe, and kind of just sort of don't put too much pressure on him coming in and being, because a lot of people have said he's going to be our Ericsson and stuff that Brentford had, which would be great. And he definitely could be. It just depends how good he actually is. And we're not going to find that out really until he starts playing Premier League matches. But from what we've seen so far, he does look like a really good player. And the awards that he's won in Brazil have been won by players like Neymar, Ronaldinho, that sort of thing. I kind of don't. The only thing that sort of makes me wonder is that he wasn't in the Brazil squad for the World Cup. You would have thought if you like winning those awards in Brazil to be the best player in Brazil, maybe he would have been in the Brazil squad. But I think only time will tell. But I think we can be a little bit excited. But we've had a lot of players over the years, like, not naming names, but João Carvalho, that come in with a big reputation, really good, loads of ability, and it just doesn't work. So I'm being quietly optimistic, if anything.
Okay, we'll come back to some of those things there that you've mentioned, Adam. So thank you for that. In the meantime, Scarpa was having a chat with the BBC's Charlie Slater. Let's just hear a little snippet of what he had to say.
What can the Nottingham Forest fans expect to see from you?
What they can expect?
Exactly.
Hard working. I would try to score some goals, give some assists. But the hard working, for sure.
Okay, so Callum, are you excited by Scarpa?
Yeah, I've fallen into the trap. I'm not really thinking about any negatives at the moment. I don't feel like he's going to feel, it sounds strange because they all will, but I don't feel like he's that kind of character that will feel too much pressure. He seems to know what he's about. Like, it's not like we've just bought a young player that's coming through. He's quite experienced. And like Adam says, he's won awards in Brazil that players like Kaká, Ronaldinho, Robinho, players like that have won towards the end of their career as well. And his left foot looks exciting. We've been struggling a little bit for set pieces. I know that Steve Cooper's tried to kind of implement Gibbs White on set pieces for everything, but Scarpa's, his corners look a lot better. He just seems to be a lot more comfortable. And I don't think he's the kind of player that we're going to just try and put straight into the starting lineup. I think he'll just kind of appear a little bit off the bench, and then it's just competition for Gibbs White and Lingard and bits like that. And I've had people, Brazil fans, in my replies on Twitter saying that it was a disgrace that he wasn't in the Brazil squad. And that's when you look at Brazil's bench over the World Cup. They had Anthony, Martinelli, Gabriel Jesus, Pedro, Rodrigo. They had Vinny Jr., Neymar, and Richarlison and Rafinha on the pitch. So their attacking like forces that Brazil had in the World Cup was insane. And there was a lot of replies from Brazil fans furious with the manager that they didn't include him. So I know that he's going to look amazing in that Brazilian league, but he's also looked good in the friendlies as well. So it's not like he's come into the friendlies and disappeared a little bit. And Valencia, I don't know, they're kind of equal to some Premier League clubs. So we'll have to see. It is about just waiting and seeing, but I don't think it's one of them where we're all relying on him. I think he's just going to get bled into the club and into the starting lineup and to see what he's got, really. He's a free transfer.
Yeah, so I think, Adam made the reference to Carvalho, if not the comparison. And I guess, Callum, what we could say is that it's a very different type of signing, because with Carvalho, we spent a lot of money on someone who was unproven and we signed on the basis of potential. Whereas with Scarpa, firstly, it's a free transfer. Secondly, he's taking a pay cut from what he was earning in Brazil, apparently. And it's because he wants to play in the Premier League. So those things, hopefully, are good signs, aren't they, in terms of Scarpa could be a player who could do a job, you know, not necessarily be the main man. If he is, then happy days, but could be somebody who is a good squad member.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's going to be about bringing him off the bench at first and seeing what he can bring to the game, because it feels like we've got loads of attackers, but it feels like we've got none at some points coming off to create, because that's the kind of thing that we're missing at points. I think Steve Cooper's still trying to figure out his best front three. It keeps going from Gibbs White, Lingard, Johnson to putting a striker in. And you know that we kind of know that the striker maybe works a bit better, but I think he wants those three because he knows they're his best players in that position. So it's one of them where he's going to be experimenting with Scarpa, and he's brought the Rubik's Cube, and already we've got Yatesy doing it on the way back from Valencia. he's going to be a character. He's got skateboarded out with Renan Lodi. He's also got, like, I think Renan Lodi was a little bit worried about being brought into a team where he didn't know too many people and the language and all that kind of stuff, and he was obviously coming to Forest to pick his reputation back up and get those minutes in, and now he's got someone that speaks his language, and they seem to be really good friends. So I mean, it could just be like you say, just for the squad, for on a free transfer, and he's taking a big pay cut. It could be a genius move just in that sort of sense, as well as the football. So it is exciting. I'm quite excited. I'm happy for it.
Thank you, Callum. Stephen, I'll come to you in a second, but Adam, before I do, just one of the, I suppose, the queries is, you know, how do we fit a player like Scarpa when we've already got two or three number 10s jostling for position in a team that doesn't always play with number 10s?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is difficult. I've looked down his, you can see on, I think it's Transfermarkt and a couple of other websites, you can see what positions they've played and that sort of stuff. And he has played as an 8 as well. So there is the potential that, you know, he could play in the 3 in midfield rather than the attacking 3, depending on who you play in and depending on what sort of idea you're going for. And especially of, you know, like Callum said, like the 60th minute or something, you're going for the game, maybe he comes on in the 3 in midfield rather than the front 3. But he's got a lot about his game. And I think that, you know, when you see him and stuff, he said himself in interviews that defensively he is also, he thinks he is a good, like, defensive player as well. So it's not just going forward. And as much as that's where his ability lies, you see players like Kevin De Bruyne play in a central midfield rather than a 10 role, because when they get on the ball, they've got the ability to play it out wide to the wingers or to go through to the middle. So I think that you could actually utilise his skill set in two ways. You could play him in the front 3 and just say to him, look, go for it. That's what you're doing. You're going attacking. You know, you want to score as a goal, get as an assist. Or you could play him in the midfield and say to him, look, when the time is right, push a bit forward, but use a lot of your defensiveness as well. So I think he fits in the midfield or the attack, and I think that makes him a bit more versatile. I don't think it's impossible that we see a front 3 of, you know, like Lingard, Johnson and Gibbs-White, and then Scarpa in the midfield. It just depends how well he adapts to the defensive side of things in England.
Mm, okay, yeah, that's quite interesting there, I think. One of the things that we've heard is that, you know, don't get fooled by the fact he's a Brazilian. He's not a Ronaldinho or a Neymar. He's somebody who is, you know, who, as we heard in that clip, he bases his game on hard work. He wants to kind of do the right thing by the team, but he also happens to have a pile driver of left foot. He's able to hit really good crosses and shots, so he can create that way. Stephen, just to come to you. So we've heard about the Rubik's Cube. We've heard about the skateboarding. Apparently he's, as well as having this kind of insane number of, like, over a million Instagram followers and having that real character about him, but he's also somebody who's into, like, classical literature. He's 28, 29 years old. One of the things he mentioned when he signed is, he, in terms of the kind of character he is, he knows he's a character, but also he wants to, you know, be a good representative. He wants to be spending time not only with his teammates, but he mentioned his family and his wife. So that sounds like somebody who's really kind of quite self-aware and quite grounded, and therefore is probably thinking, you know what, I'm not necessarily, you know, it's not just necessarily that I'm going to jump straight in and be the main character here.
Yeah, he sounds like somebody who is quite grounded and down to earth, and with his age as well, at 28, he's not coming over to English football as a youngster with who's perhaps a bit inexperienced. And I think we've seen that with some signings before at Forest. He comes over as a 28-year-old.
You're talking about Carvalho again, aren't you?
I didn't want to say it, but, you know, the he who shall not be named and all that. But no, he's coming over with plenty of experience under his belt, and with, if you look at his stats, his track record in terms of goals and assists, particularly in the last 3 or 4 seasons, it's really good and it's promising. And if he can bring that into the Premier League, that kind of form, then he could be a real asset for us. And I think he looks like he'll be a good character in the dressing room. He already looks like he's adapting to life in England and really throwing himself into things by skateboarding down Columbus Street, for one, and he seems very up to speed with kind of culture and speaks very good English as well, as we hear from his interviews. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he settles in and what he can offer us. I don't expect him to be playing 90 minutes week in, week out, certainly not straight away. So he could be a really good asset and a bit of a wild card from our point of view as we get back into the regular season. He could offer us something that nobody else in the squad can.
Yeah, and what I'm really intrigued about is that he seems quite humble about his abilities. He's talking about hard work first. I'm just going to move on to one of those other number 10s. So just coming back to you, Adam, Jesse Lingard. Now, there's some speculation that Scarpa might have been signed as the kind of long-term replacement for Lingard, who's only on this one-year contract. Now, we know that Jesse's taken the time to talk about his mental health through that documentary on Channel 4. He's also recently acknowledged that he didn't do enough since joining Forest to earn his World Cup place. And the quote here is, "I needed to kick on as soon as I signed here, which I didn't. Understandably, that's why you don't get picked." But he did also say that, you know, he has hopes that he can get an England recall if things pick up. So Adam, as our main J-Lings cheerleader, we saw him starting to play with a smile on his face again just before the break. Do you think that he can really have an impact on Forest's season once we resume?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think from if you've watched the documentary and if you've seen some of his stuff on Instagram and Twitter, that sort of thing, he clearly does like, you know, being here. He clearly likes the, you know, being at Forest. And I think that Scarpa and him can play together rather than saying, oh, he has to come in to replace Lingard when Lingard leaves, because if we stay up, I don't think Lingard does leave.
Mm. And just in terms of sheer ability and an ability to help the team transition as well, if you've got a team which has got Scarpa, Lingard and Gibbs White, that should be, you know, that should be frightening for opposition to teams, shouldn't it, Adam?
Oh, 100%. And I think the thing is, like Callum mentioned, if you don't start one of them, right, so if one of them doesn't start, bringing them off the bench, even at 0-0 or 1-1, just to go and win you the game and stuff, it gives a tired defence something else to think about. And, you know, any of those. But, I mean, I think you'd see Gibbs White's going to start every game he's available, right? He's the youngest of them all. You know, he's Steve Cooper's, you know, probably favourite player in the squad. He loves Gibbs White and, you know, we can all see why. So it's then going to be Johnson, Scarpa and Lingard if Scarpa's going to be playing in the front three. So it's a case then of it gives Steve Cooper a selection dilemma, but it also gives teams more to think about off the bench. And, you know, big squads win you games in the Premier League sometimes. We've seen that. You see a team like Man City or something, that it's 1-1 and stuff, and then they can bring Mahrez, Grealish and, you know, Bernardo Silva, and if he doesn't start, and they've got Alvarez as well off the bench and stuff. Like, having a bigger squad and having more options off the bench can win you games in this league. So it's only a good thing for us, really, isn't it? It's only a positive.
Let's move on to talk about the gaffer just briefly. So Steve Cooper was recently talking about the challenges of Premier League life. Everything is different. It's a lot quicker, more athletic. The speed of the game, the technique of the game, everything is at a much higher level. Don't get me wrong, we're really enjoying it. It's a great league to be part of and we're proud of it. Callum, we're going to come back to this a little bit later as well, but Steve Cooper's he's just great, isn't he? What I love about the things that he says is that he doesn't just resort to hyperbole and cliche like we've seen with so many, particularly British Premier League managers. He's in a class of his own in that respect, isn't he?
Yeah, he just gets it big time. And what he's touched on there in two separate occasions there is how important it is to us for just to be in the Premier League overall. Like, I waited my whole life just to see us in the Premier League. And he got that as soon as he came to Forest and he got us there. You could see as soon as it was the first thing that he said was that we belonged in the Premier League. And he referenced something there that Thomas Frank touched on. I don't know if anyone saw it, but when Graham Potter and Thomas Frank were on the Amazon for their game. And he said that you get punished a lot more in this league. And that's exactly what Cooper's touched on there. Everything's different, a lot quicker, a lot more athletic. A mistake in the Championship that might not cost you anything could cost you a goal. In the Premier League, it's that simple because of the ability. So he understands that. He knows exactly what league he's in, and he knows that he's not, there's no way to mess around sort of thing. Like we've been on the end of some results against City and Arsenal. So he already kind of knows in that aspect, but he also understands just how important it is to be there anyway. And for me, I don't know how it is for everyone else. If we get relegated, the main thing for me was that day at Wembley and getting there in the first place. And he gets that. He knows what it is. And like you say, he doesn't resort to cliches. He just speaks as himself. And I love to listen to him. I love to just watch him. I think he's so insightful, and I think he is a Premier League manager as well. So I'm just really happy that we've still got him.
Well, as you love to listen to him, let's hear a bit more from Steve Cooper talking about his relationship with the fans.
When you care about something so much, then when it goes through it's like a family, isn't it? When it goes through a difficult moment, that's when the care really shows. And for me, it's easy to be a manager in a good time. You know, I want the supporters to see the real me in tough moments, you know, because I think that's what a real leader is. But more importantly, I want them to see a team that represents that as well, you know. And it's not easy to be successful, and you do need some ups and downs to become successful. And you have to treat them both the same. And that's what we're trying to do. And if there has been some low moments, I care even more about it, you know, and I get even more motivated to do well, because that's how you feel when you really care about when something's really important to you. So, but I know the players are exactly the same. I know the supporters are the same. You know, all the staff are behind the scenes at the City Ground as well. Is we're all in this together, and we're massively motivated now.
Stephen, I was talking to an old friend of mine, so he's someone who I've known since childhood. He's a United fan, and I was trying to explain to him, he doesn't live in Nottingham, and I was trying to explain to him about exactly why we love Steve Cooper so much. And I did say, it's like, he's either, I mean, regular podcast listeners will have heard me say this before, he's either the greatest confidence trickster of all time, or he genuinely loves Forest. And those words there, I mean, I wish I'd had that clip to play to my friend, because he gets it, doesn't he?
Yeah, and ever since he came through the door, he's got it. He's just thrown himself into being Forest manager. He understands it. He's connected with the fans. And I in my lifetime, I've never seen a Forest manager have that connection with the club and everybody associated with the club. It's something quite special. And it is, it's hard to explain for people if you're not a Forest fan and you're only looking at it from the outside in. But when you hear the way he speaks about the club, you see the results that happened after he took over, and the way that he galvanized the club in so many ways. It was like a night and day difference between Forest before Cooper and then Forest with Cooper. And long may it continue. I mean, he's just an incredible guy who's done a fantastic job, and I hope he can stay for many more years to come and see the job through, keep us in the Premier League, and who knows, kick on from there.
And to the listeners, what I will say is we did discuss this in our pre-World Cup podcast. We talked a lot about those kinds of themes, and Baz mentioned, because obviously for people of a certain age, and we have Brian Clough to compare to, but Baz also mentioned that, you know, Steve Cooper's connection to the club feels almost more pure even than Brian Clough. So I will direct you, listener, to go back and listen to our November podcast if you hadn't already done so. Before we just go talk about other things, I want to just take a few minutes to acknowledge that Forest's fate this season doesn't just depend upon how Cooper and our team do. I'm definitely not going to mention the fact that we kickstarted Leicester's season for them. Now, we've had a few teams who've made managerial decisions in the last few weeks, including Wolves, Bournemouth and Southampton. Adam, do you see anything to fear from those other teams in and around the relegation zone / bottom half of the table?
as much as obviously our fate isn't just in our hands, I don't think we should be worrying about other teams and thinking, oh, you know, what Southampton's going to do, what's Wolves going to do. I mean, I've said on the pod before, I mean, Southampton's managerial appointment made me really happy because I don't think Nathan Jones is a Premier League manager. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that was fine. Similar sense to Bournemouth. I mean, I think Bournemouth will be in the bottom three come the end of the season. I think Wolves' managerial appointment is a very good one for them. Lopetegui is a really good manager. So I think that I really do think Wolves will kick on second half of the season. I don't think they'll be in the bottom three come the end of the season. I think they will really kick on now. So, but look, when we play these teams, when we play the teams that are around the bottom and stuff, they're the games that we need to get the points. We need to beat the teams around us. You know, that's always been the key to staying up. You know, we've got Southampton soon. I think it's one of those. We have to temper expectations a little bit because when we come back, we've got Man United, then Chelsea. But I think we'll beat Chelsea at home. To be very bold on that. I think you heard it here first, lads. I think we will because I think that Chelsea are so up and down under Potter. I think that they're going to have our home form, and we beat Liverpool at home. I see Chelsea in a very similar vein to the way that I saw Liverpool at the time, that it was probably not a bad time to play them, and that's kind of how I feel about that game. So, but then we've got Southampton and we've got Leicester as well in January, although I don't think Leicester will get dragged into it. We've got Bournemouth in January. You know, we've got games around the teams around us. If we win those games, you're giving yourself a much better opportunity to stay in the league. So no, I'm not scared about the teams around us at all. I think we've just got to keep doing what we're doing. We've got to keep winning games.
Callum, just very quickly, are there three worse teams than Forest in the Premier League this season?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I agree with everything Adam's just said. I'm quite happy with Bournemouth and Southampton's appointments, so I'm putting them in the bottom three. I think Wolves will jump out. They seem to be quite keen in January with big players, and the management appointment's really good. I think the teams that could be, well, there's two teams really, Everton and Leeds, I think could be worse mm-hmm. than Forest. Everton are kind of are funny because they've had like little performances from Iwobi and Tarkowski and Cody are forming a bit of a partnership, but they only sit a point above us. And I'm not going to go into like bits and bobs and close losses and the Brentford game where we got shafted out of 3 points and all that kind of stuff. But we're not that far away from them ability wise, and we gave them a good game at Goodison. So it's like Adam said, we've got to beat the teams around us, and we've got those games coming up, Leeds and Bournemouth and Southampton and bits like that. So I do think there's three worst teams, but I do think we're going to be down there for most of the season. So it's going to be a bit of a hold your breath for most of the season, but it's what we came for. We didn't come to come and sit in the top half straight away or try and reach Europe. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be horrendous, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah. We're not going to speculate about transfer windows today. What we'll do is we'll talk more about transfers once everything resumes and when we get into January and so on. What we will do is we'll give the panel a little bit of a break. In a few minutes, we'll talk about the Reds players at the World Cup and we'll have a game of Guess That Red. But firstly, it's time for this.
The 1865 sketch by Jeremy Davis. It's fair to say that Forest players have had mixed fortunes at this World Cup, with Remo Freuler scoring for Switzerland against Serbia, but then being on the wrong end of a 6-goal thumping by Portugal. And of course, Wayne Hennessy showing Rishi Sunak that second choices can make an impression on the world stage, before trying to leave the wrong sort of impression on Iranian striker Mehdi Taremi and getting sent off. Hopefully, it's the only time this season that he finishes bottom of the table with the team in red. The extended break over the World Cup for the rest of the squad was always earmarked as an invaluable window of opportunity for Steve Cooper to fashion the new signings into a team as united and committed as last season's promotion winners. But as well as the glamour friendlies against European giants Olympiacos and Valencia, another notable development has been the arrival of Forest's 23rd signing of the new season in Brazilian Gustavo Scarpa. Now, I'm old enough to remember the days when Forest signing a Brazilian attacker would have got pulses racing like when the club signed the first Italian to play in the Premier League in Andrea Silenzi, even if he did turn out to be, to the great traditions of Italian forwards, what pineapple on pizza is to the traditions of Italian cuisine. But for all that the global nature of today's game means that Scarpa isn't even the first Brazilian to join the squad this season, one thing that does stand out about him are his hobbies, Rubik's Cubes and skateboarding. It's a far cry from the stereotypical footballer's pastimes, golf, fast cars, designer clothes and video games. But he's not the first footballer with a notable hobby. Even at Forest, we've had plenty of players famous for their off-the-field activities. From Stuart Pearce's punk music and side hustle as an electrician, Des Walker's love of motorbikes, rumoured to have been the only things faster than him, and of course Stan Collymore's occasional visits to car parks to have sex with strangers. Away from Nottingham, Cristiano Ronaldo apparently enjoys bingo, which helped him to learn English when he joined Manchester United. Appropriately enough, one of the joys of the World Cup was playing Ronaldo bingo whenever Portugal were on, and attempting to complete a full house of the superstar's anguished gesticulations and facial expressions whenever the team did something good without him. Speaking of South American imports with interesting hobbies, former Newcastle man Nobby Solano used to play the trumpet to unwind. He'd fit right in at Newcastle now, where blowing your own trumpet is the order of the day. And on the subject of former Newcastle players, despite famously never having watched a film, Michael Owen does have a more cerebral hobby to go with his horse racing. Apparently, he enjoys jigsaws. I don't know if this is common among England strikers, but if it's a hobby that Harry Kane shares, that might go some way to explaining why, against France, he went to pieces in the box. Incidentally, am I the only one that finds the use of the phrase "the last piece of the jigsaw" in football somewhat jarring, as in how Alfie's boy Haaland is the last piece of Pep's puzzle at City? The implication being that this last piece has been the hardest to find, but surely in real life the final piece of the puzzle is the easiest and most obvious to identify, as it's the only one left in the box. Another former Liverpool man with an interesting hobby is Joe Allen, noted for keeping hens, whom he rescues from getting slaughtered at the end of their commercial lives. Sadly, the Wales midfielder was unable to prevent Wayne Hennessy making like a headless chicken against Iran.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Thank you very much, Jeremy, and wishing you a very Merry Christmas. So welcome back, listener, to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. And just before we get going again, just a quick word to say thank you to the Sports Social Network who host our podcast, and also to our partners FanHub and Fandango Football App. Keep an eye on our social media. You can get all the links by visiting 1865.football. Now, we're going to return to on-pitch matters, but also to the opinions of our listeners. We've run a few polls, and let's have a look at the first couple of questions. So the first question we asked, and we've touched upon this already. Wanted to ask, which Forest regular do you think played best at the World Cup? And 81.5% of our voters agreed with our panellists in that Remo Freuler came head and shoulders above the rest. Nico Williams got 13.4%. Cheku Kouyaté, who obviously unfortunately got injured, and we'll come back to that in a bit, he got 4.1%. And Paul Brennan Johnson just got the 1%. So, the second part of that question, though, was something that I just wanted to throw in there. So which Forest fringe player or lone player do you think did well at the World Cup? And we gave you the options of Hwang Yu-jeou, Brandon Aguilera, Richie Larea and Ethan Horvath. And Richie Larea really came head and shoulders above the rest again. So 84.7% of the votes. It was pretty even amongst the others. Hwang got 6.2. He obviously started for Korea, but he did have a bit of a
missed a bit of a sitter. Aguilera and Horvath both in the 4% type region. Stephen, give us a little bit of a rundown about that. You know, I think we've already established Freuler did well. He scored a goal. He went far in the tournament. You've already mentioned Hennessy, whose tournament ended in slight ignominy. But Richie Larrea, he's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's a player who's just been very, very unfortunate that we got promoted ahead of schedule, isn't he?
Yeah, he was bought, I think, with the view to this season still being in the Championship, and Jed Spence moved on to another club. And of course, that didn't happen. We got promoted, and Larrea was surplus to requirements in the Premier League. But in those games for Canada, I mean, we were all impressed by the way Canada approached their World Cup games, and were perhaps a bit unfortunate to exit the way they did. But even to a point where people were calling for Larrea to be recalled and brought back into the Forest team, which I don't think is going to happen. But he caught the eye, definitely. And as for some of the other Forest players at the tournament, Cheick Kouyaté, who we've mentioned, he was stretchered off in Senegal's opening game against the Netherlands. He collided with Frankie de Jong and was taken off. The Senegal boss, Aliou Cissé, thought it was a twisted ankle to begin with, and thought that Kouyaté would be okay, but it's now a torn hamstring, and there was some kind of misdiagnosis with the Senegal medical team, and certainly the Forest medical staff aren't happy about that, because that's Kouyaté out now for an extended period.
Yeah. So, Callum, let's talk about that. I think the Forest medical team probably have beef with the Senegal national medical team, because firstly, we lost to Moussa Niakate. He went on international duty. I think he played a few minutes, and then since then he's been on crutches and has, you know, still going to be out for some time. And now Cheick Kouyaté has got this injury. He's had an operation. He's going to be out for at least a couple of months, maybe longer. You can understand why the club's medical staff might be a little bit annoyed with the Senegal FA, don't you?
Yeah, I thought the Niakate decision was off in itself, because it seemed like he was just getting back to fitness. And rather than being eased back in by his club, it seemed like he was going to be eased back in by his national team. And I think he switched to Senegalese nationality in terms of football, because I think he had more of an opportunity and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was his first kind of time away with them, all that kind of stuff. So he was never going to turn that down. He was really excited. I think he was trying to see if he could get into the World Cup as well. But it's obviously not helped his injury and had him out for a longer period of time. He was training on his own with Senegal and bits like that after being on the bench. And then Kouyaté as well with the mistreatment. I don't really know how they've managed to get both situations so wrong, but it's impacted us greatly, because Niakate was one for me that I thought was going to be like, he's going to be our big player for the season in defence. And he did look good before he was out. And Kouyaté as well, he's scored an important, well, it wasn't an important goal, but he scored against Bournemouth in his one of his first games. And then he's kind of led the midfield a lot more than I thought he would. And now he's out for 2 months. So that's another player down. So yeah, I can understand the frustrations big time. We've not been helped out by Senegal at all.
Mm. And of course, you know, you mentioned about Niakate going, I can't imagine that if you've got, I think it's a hamstring he's got, isn't it? Sitting on a plane for hours and hours probably isn't going to do you much good. But also, sometimes you've got to take decisions out of the hands of the players. If you're trying to, if you've got the carrot of playing at the World Cup dangled in front of you, you can't blame Moussa for saying, yeah, I'm going to go, I'm going to give it a go. And it's been to his detriment because he's missing games, and it's been to Forest's detriment because they're missing someone who they thought was going to be an important player. Just on that same topic, Adam, Nico Williams was one of two kind of concussion incidents. both in England matches. We had the Iranian goalkeeper. Do we agree with Alan Shearer that the concussion subs provision needs to change? Because no player is going to say, I'm going to come off voluntarily if they think there's a chance that they can continue. So they need to have temporary subs, don't they?
Well, yeah. At the same time, in any sport, what player is going to go, oh, I'm playing on the world stage here for my nation? They're not going to come off. You could break your leg and you'd still limp. You're not going to want to come off. Like, I completely agree with the fact that we need, you know, sort of temporary substitutions for concussions, because concussions, not only obviously for, you know, for a lot of stuff that I do, obviously I've the wrestling side of things, a concussion can be a very, very serious injury. I mean, it can, you don't want to mess with your brain. You know what I mean? You really don't. And I think that more needs to be done to protect the players, certainly. But I think injuries in general is difficult on international, isn't it? Because club managers notoriously don't really like international fixtures because there's nothing that can be done. You know, a club can't control the way a player is treated on international duty. They then come back injured. You do get compensation for it. So Forest are going to be compensated for Kiarte being injured. It won't be a lot, but it'll be something. But what compensation is it that one of our key players is now going to be missing for a couple of months? And at the age that he's at, his body's what, 31? A 2-month injury, especially with your hamstring, could very easily turn into a 3-month injury or a 4-month injury. And it is frustrating as a club fan. But I think it's hard to get nations to match clubs for medical teams and for facilities and that sort of thing, especially some nations that they just don't have the funding to do that. So I actually think it would be a good idea that sometimes club personnel on some members of club personnel actually go to camp with players, because I actually think that would then help the situation a little bit more. But yeah, it's frustrating. The Nicarte one was frustrating as well. But we've just got to deal with it, I suppose, as the club fans now.
Yeah, just quickly, Stephen. Adam mentioned the payments that clubs get if the players get injured on international duty. Also worth pointing out that I think it's each player who's on World Cup duty, the club gets, I think, a small fee. It's something like £1,000 a day or something like that. So we had five first teamers who are out for the World Cup. And then we also had the five people who've been loaned out. Question I've not been able to find the answer to is, does the lone host club get the payment, or do Forest, or is there a split somewhere? It's an interesting one. But actually, in that sense, having five first teamers at the World Cup has probably worked out nicely for us. It's not enough to disrupt the squad. As Baz said last time, in fact, Baz said before the World Cup, you know, if you've got a bunch of England players in your team, then unless they were to win the tournament, and of course, we know that they didn't, they're going to come back disappointed. And of course, you know, we'll see how Harry Kane responds to his penalty heartache. But when you're away with teams like Senegal or Wales, or, you know, you're going to come back going, what an amazing experience. And then on top of that, the club get a little bit of recompense for the fact that they've got some first team players who are away. So financially, as well as the kind of emotionally, there's lots of good coming out of that, isn't there?
It's nice to have players on that world stage. And I think we've got players who've enjoyed being part of the World Cup, like Brennan Johnson, Nico Williams.
Maybe not Hennessy.
Not so much Hennessy. Certainly Freuler as well, who scored and in doing so became the first Forest player to score at a World Cup since Pierre Van Hooijdonk in 1998.
That's one for you trivia fans. That's going to come up in a Nottingham pub quiz sometime soon.
So, you know, it's nice to have that bit of Forest representation on the world stage. It's been a while. I think the only Forest World Cup player might have been Gonzalo Jara for Chile, but I think he was on his way out of the club anyway. So, you know, it's nice to have that. But yeah, it's good for the players that we're not, for example, having players who are going to be in the final and half of them are going to be crushed if they lose and coming back on a downer. You know, our players have gone there with not very fancy teams on the whole and have probably just enjoyed that experience. And as you say, it's not disrupted the squad too much. So Steve Cooper's been able to work with the vast majority of his squad through these mid-season friendlies and these training sessions that have been going on for the last 3 or 4 weeks. So it's not disrupted us too much in that sense. And hopefully we can carry some of that into the Premier League season when it starts up, that we've got a settled squad that's had more time to work together. Steve Cooper's had more time to work with the players, and hopefully we reap the benefits of that.
And it's effectively a pre-season with the squad, isn't it? I think also, I'm going back to the point you made, though. I think Kylian Mbappe did show that you can be very, very pleased just to get to the final. If you don't know what I'm talking about, listener, then look it up on Google Images. Thank you, everyone. Now it's time for this.
1865. Guess That Red.
Yes, it's time for Guess That Red. We're going to hear up to 5 clues from Quizmaster Adam about a Reds player from the past. And we're going to have to try and work out who that player is. So, Callum, as this is your first time playing this, just to say that Adam's going to read out the clues. If you know who it is, just shout out your name and then we can have a guess. So over to you, Adam.
Thank you very much. So, the first clue for said player is that I played 55 times for my national team between 1992 and 2001.
Rich.
Go on.
Ryan Roy.
It is not.
You want bloody shooting?
In my time in my playing career, I won 2 trophies. Neither of them were with Forest.
Stephen.
Go on.
Nikola Jurcan.
It is not, I'm afraid.
Oh, Rich.
Go on.
Alfie Haaland.
No.
What? Bloody rubbish! Rubbish!
I'll carry on.
Yep.
So, I started my footballing career with Sion in Switzerland. That might be the one.
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Mm. Oh.
Oh, that's a really annoying one. No, you got sea of blank faces here, Adam.
Steven.
Oh,
Marco Pascolo.
Here we go. Well done, mate.
And just like Marco Pascolo, you're pulling that one back out of the bag. Marco Pascolo, who, of course, started Forest's championship campaign as the first choice goalkeeper. I can't remember which campaign that was. After
the next clue was actually I played for Forest the 97-98 season, playing 5 times.
That's right. Was it, so would that be under Platt, would it be? Not yet. That would have been under Dave Harry Bassett, sorry.
That was it, and he'd have been replaced by Dave Besant.
Yeah. So when you get replaced by a 40-year-old, I don't know what that tells you. but still, he had a good career apart from at Forest. Once again, a player who signs for a club and then it's not necessarily his fault that it doesn't go very well. Let's go back to the polls just to round off today's podcast. So our last 2 questions were, I know we're revisiting stuff that we've done before with you, listener, but where do you think Forest will finish in the Premier League? I was trying to get a sense of whether there's renewed optimism having had a break. So there was 1.7% of people out of 347 voters who thought Forest would finish in the top 7. So, you know, you're going to have a great Christmas. There's 8th to 12th position, got 5.2% of the votes. 8.1% of you thought that Forest would get relegated, and 85% of you said that Forest would finish in 13th to 17th position. And I think, you know, panel, we've already discussed this. I don't think there's a huge amount that we're going to add. The last question was, what do you think, revisiting a theme that we talked about earlier, What do you think about the Forest gaffer, Steve Cooper? So the choices were, I adore him, I like him, he's okay, and I don't like him. He's okay got 4.4%. I like him got 16.3%. I adore him got 78.4%. And there's obviously a couple of Derby fans in there because I don't like him got 0.9%. So there's no accounting for taste, is there? On that topic, I had said previously that I've written a piece for The Observer, which is going in their kind of their halfway point article on New Year's. I've mentioned in there that basically Steve Cooper either really loves the club or he's the finest actor since Laurence Olivier. And I just want to play this clip of Darren Fletcher, the Five Live and BT Sport commentator, talking at an event by the Evening Post.
You could go anywhere in the league. Man City got Pep Guardiola, but the fans don't feel about Pep Guardiola what you feel about him. And Pep Guardiola doesn't feel about the Man City fans the way that he feels about you. This is absolutely unique. I know that you know that. I'm glad that the owner's seen that. I know that the chairman knows that. And I think it's what's going to carry this club a long way. Everything about this relationship is genuine. And if I was an outsider looking in, I'd say, no, bull, that's not happening. But because I live in the city and I see it, and I see it from both sides, I know that it's real. And
I mean, Stephen, that neatly sums up what we were talking about earlier, doesn't it? That beautiful relationship, the fact that we absolutely adore Steve Cooper, that is something that can really, hopefully, carry the club a long way because he loves us as well.
Yeah, there's that real bond, isn't there, between Cooper and the fans, and you hope that that keeps him at the club for as long as he wants to stay as Forest manager, and likewise that the fans stay with him even if things are not always going to plan and we're having tough runs of form, which has happened already this season and could well happen again before the end of the campaign, because that's the Premier League for you. And when you're a club fresh to it like we are, you've got to ride out those tricky spells, and hopefully Cooper's got that goodwill in the bank and that love from the fans, which will allow it to happen. Says a lot as well when you've got an incredible team like Man City with brilliant managers such as Pep Guardiola, and there isn't that love and that bond between the manager and the fans when you consider all the trophies he's won for them and has arguably put together the best team in the club's history. It just shows you, doesn't it, that how those bonds can be formed between club and manager, and that how special it can be when it is there. And then we've got to really make the most of it and enjoy every second.
And Callum, because this is your first podcast, I want to give the last word to you. In your lifetime as a Forest fan in your 20s, you know, where would you rank Steve Cooper in terms of all the many, many, many Forest managers you've seen?
Number one by far. Seen some bad ones and seen some okay ones. And I mean, in my lifetime from watching Forest, I think the closest was probably Sabri Lamouchi maybe as well. So I'm a bit of a spring chicken, but
yes, Sabri got it as well, didn't he? Sabri really understood the history and the kind of the values that the fans and the club have historically had. And even though he fell short, you know, when we famously capitulated, there's still a lot of people who had a lot of love for Sabri. So it shows that connection between fans and gaffer can be really massively important, doesn't it, Callum?
Yeah, exactly. And the comparison with Man City as well, it can be, there's different levels of success, isn't there? To Man City, winning the Champions League is what getting to the Premier League is like for us, except, like, I think that our desperation to get there after so many years is even more important than that. And I always talk about, like, Liverpool can win as whatever they want. They can win the League Cup and the FA Cup and the Premier League. It will never really compare to getting us to the Premier League, I don't think, in my opinion. So I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but it'll take a lot to kind of take Steve Cooper off that pedestal now. He's the best since Clough, in my opinion. And Darren Fletcher summed it up perfectly. We love him. He loves us. And he's the man.
Thank you very much, Callum. Thank you also to Adam and to Stephen Topless. I mean, just to sum up there what you said as well, Callum, because this is our last Forest Ramble podcast. We're going to have match reports coming up. This is our last Forest Ramble of 2022. So let's just remind ourselves, we'll always have Wembley. I want to also say thank you to Jeremy for the sketch. I want to say thank you to the 1865 podcast, who you probably heard ferreting around in the background as our producer today. And most of all, thank you, listener, for joining us. If you're feeling in the Christmas spirit and want to give us a gift, the best thing you can do for us is to share our podcast via social media, tell your friends, or leave us a review with a lovely comment, especially if you use Apple Podcasts. And we really do appreciate it, and it helps other fans to find our stuff. We'll be back after the Blackburn match, and we'll be bringing you match reports throughout the rest of the season. And we hope that you will join us. You could have had my name sounds very similar to a global explorer from the Middle Ages. So now, none of you lot did any history at school, obviously.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.